Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 16th of October. And we talk about last night's presidential debate this hour of the program. The last one we'll talk about for 4 years. Isn't that sad? Or some of you will be saying, thank goodness we don't have to talk about them. It was an interesting debate, I thought, last night. It's interesting that the independents who were featured on CBS and CNN and also on Fox News said last night that Barack Obama had won pretty significantly. The commentators, most of them, thought it was John McCain's best performance and his win. But look at these numbers from last night. 53% of uncommitted voters identified Democratic nominee Barack Obama as the winner of last night's debate at CBS. 22% said Republican rival John McCain won. At CNN, a separate poll of several hundred debate watchers favored Obama by large margins, 58% to McCain's 31%. And the Frank Luntz focus group on Fox News said that Barack Obama won the debate. Luntz termed it a clear majority. He said that it was a very good night for Barack Obama. Joining us this hour to talk about all that was discussed last night, the economy, certainly their plans for what's going on economically and how we're all ailing these days, abortion, the deficit, education, whether or not they could say to each other's faces what has been said on the campaign trail concerning segregation, concerning palling around with terrorists, etc. And we'll welcome your phone calls. Our phone lines get pretty jammed during these discussions. We have a lot of political junkies out there, so please give us a call. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Or you're welcome to send us an email, and that's talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. Our guest is Professor David Michael Green. He's Associate Professor of Political Science at Hofstra University, where the debate was held, teaches courses on American politics, international relations, European politics, American foreign policy, comparative politics, and presents an on-site workshop each year at the United Nations. And we welcome you, Professor, to our discussion. Hi. Thanks very much for being with us.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's great to be back in Wisconsin, even if it's in a sort of disembodied fashion.
It's a good state. I was interested in what, and let's start with this. Senator Obama at the end was talking during his 2 minutes of wrapping things up of brighter days still ahead, which is hard for many Americans to imagine brighter days right now. What do you think about that comment? Are brighter days ahead?
Well, gosh, it's as hard for me as anybody to predict the future. Things look fairly grim for America right now. I mean, we have multiple crises on our hands. We have an environmental crisis. We have a crisis of two wars that are both really failing. We have a larger foreign policy crisis. We obviously now have a giant economic crisis. We have a fiscal crisis. You know, it's a plague of all storms sort of at once. So, obviously, you can't write off a country and certainly not a superpower, but we certainly have a lot of hard work ahead of us. Politically speaking, I think that's something that a candidate would probably never say, at least the first part of my response to your question. I think one part of being a successful candidate is to be sort of upbeat kind of all the time, that's sort of the Ronald Reagan sunny disposition. Mm-hmm. Angle. And so I don't think you'd hear that even from a critic of the, you know, present administration. But I think the truth is that America has really dug itself into several very deep holes right now. And it's going to be tough sledding for any administration, you know, for the next 4, 8 and years, decade, maybe even more, I think.
Did you find, Professor Green, any substantial difference between their plans for economic recovery?
Yeah, I think there are differences. I don't think that McCain has, I'm not sure there's a lot of strength to McCain's plan. He seems to be fairly focused on buying up mortgages, which of course Obama criticized as not a smart thing to do because he wants to buy them up at the bank value rather than the present value. Actually, frankly, I guess I would have to say that I don't think either one of them are proposing a lot that's very substantive at this moment, at least in terms of the economic recovery. And there may be some wisdom in that, and there may be some fairness in that, in the sense that we really have a very much, I think, evolving a crisis on our hands. I don't think we know by a long stretch how deep this is going to go, and I don't think we know in what directions it's going to go. So in that sense, voters may want a president who doesn't necessarily come in with a rigid set of plans, but rather comes in with some principles and somebody that they would trust then to be able to react and maybe to get ahead of the curve in terms of trying to solve this economic crisis. So in my judgment, neither one of them have really come out with a lot that's substantive. Obama is talking about something of a jobs works program, which I think may resonate better with voters, but it doesn't seem like a very big program from what I can tell.
And what about their tax plans? Do you think that we Americans have a pretty good understanding of where they are on this, or are we confused because these messages have been pretty constant from one camp and from the other over the last three debates? Are you going to spread the wealth around? Are you taxing people who make $42,000 a year? Who's going to benefit from your plan? Have they laid out their plans, and do we understand them?
Well, it's hard to know whether we understand them. It's hard to know what people perceive. I mean, Obama keeps saying rather incessantly that, you know, if you make less than $250,000, then nothing's going to change for you, except that for most of you, you'll get a tax decrease of some amount. And McCain keeps saying, well, that's not really true. In fact, and you mentioned the $42,000 number, McCain keeps repeating over and over that, you know, you may have a tax increase even down to $42,000 per year income. So I think it probably boils down at the end of the day to a sense of whom you trust. And it seems to me that from the poll data that McCain is sort of losing that battle, and to some degree actually losing what in many ways must have been his strong suit coming into this election, which is a sense of credibility, in a sense that he's something of a different politician. So he's really, you could really see it especially in this third debate, trying to get traction out of this tax issue, because that's an old, you know, oldie but goodie for Republicans. And of course it resonates with a lot of American voters, especially when they're hurting. And so over and over last night, I thought much more than actually in the first two debates, he was talking about spreading the wealth. Mm-hmm. And he actually used the term class warfare. But apparently, looking at the instant polls, that and the rest of his performance didn't resonate very well with voters.
Right. And there again, I was really struck, and I have been, by the last couple debates. I don't know if they're noticing that Obama's moving ahead fairly strongly in the polls, and they feel as though they want people to keep watching the news or what it is. But the commentators last night, so many of them said it was McCain's night. He did very well. And then you looked at these groups that they had gathered, and I don't know if we should pay attention to them or not, but they're all saying by these huge margins that it was Obama's night. What's up with that?
Well, you know, Kathleen, there's so many benchmarks that you can apply if you want to ask the question, who won the debate? You know, you could sort of score it on points like a debate judge might, a formal debate judge, and you can flow chart it. You could do it that way. You can do it in terms of kind of truthfulness, and that, of course, has implications for your own ideological perspective, because we disagree even on facts, not only on policy and ideology. People do, and you could score it in terms of who kind of hits people at an emotional level, which is pretty important. I think my sense is that voters are much more visceral than they are cognitive, much more than we'd like to admit. There's so many different ways that you can approach, you could ask who has the best zinger of the night. And I think that's part of what you're seeing there, because it depends on what your benchmark was. I mean, I think this was McCain's strongest performance in some ways.
I agree.
In terms of kind of, you know, the facts. But in some ways, it's also his weakest performance, because I think he came off to a lot of people as surly and aggressive. And so, you know, at the end of the day, what he wants is not to win debates, but to win votes. And my guess is that he probably didn't. So maybe he impressed, you know, some of the commentariat about how he was tough and how he had the facts lined up and how he had the zingers and everything. But if he turned off voters because of his attitude, then, you know, I don't think that fulfills any goal that he had going into the debate.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about that which they hadn't said to each other's face, but they had said, but had been said in rallies and by people who are supporting one candidate or the other. It was interesting to me that McCain was as outraged as he was about Representative John Lewis's allegations. He was right. just very upset, and yet Obama had equally bad charges leveled against him from Sarah Palin for palling around with terrorists, and he didn't seem to be at all as outraged about that allegation, which is, you know, fairly serious allegation. Why was one so outraged and the other remained so cool about an issue that must rile him up on some level, don't you think?
Well, I think the clear answer is because Sarah Palin said it, and you know, that's his running mate, and he's certainly not going to say anything negative about her, but I think many Americans were pretty outraged about that, and many Americans probably think it's fairly shameful that she's saying that and that he's not, you know, disavowing that. The John Lewis scenario is fairly interesting because if you'll remember back, what was it, in late August when McCain and Obama both did those extended interviews at Saddleback Church, and McCain was asked, you know, name two or three people that you would listen to as president who would be close advisors of yours, and he said John Lewis.
Oh, did he? I didn't know that.
He said John Lewis, and, you know, that was interesting at the time because John Lewis came out the next day and said, you know, I've been in Congress with this guy for a couple decades, and he's hardly ever talked to me. But it's interesting now because, okay, well, John Lewis just gave you some advice, Senator McCain, and the first thing you did is come out and, you know, and trashed him and expressed all your resentment. And then he also, I think, was a little disingenuous because he said to Obama, you know, why don't you disavow John Lewis's comments? Well, first of all, it seems to me it's not really Obama's place to do that. John Lewis doesn't work for the Obama campaign. He doesn't represent Obama. But secondly, as Obama indicated in the debate, he had said, you know, I agree with part of what John Lewis said, and part of it, I think, was over the top. And then Obama went on to indicate John Lewis even came out later and said part of what I said was probably over the top, and I retract that. So, again, if you score that one sort of on the merits, it seems to me that McCain was really off the mark there. And then also if you score it at that sort of emotional level, I think that, again, he probably alienated voters with some of that stuff and some of the material about Bill Ayers as well.
What about the question of how they who they would, and I think this is an interesting question, which I'd like to hear them respond to a little bit more. Who would be in office with them? Who would they surround themselves with in terms of bringing, you know, the best and the brightest to Washington? What did you think of their responses to that?
Well, was that the question about where Obama started talking about his economic advisors
right.
instead of Bill? Yeah, okay. I think he was reacting to the Bill Ayers scenario, and I think what he was saying was, you know, Bill Ayers is not an associate of mine. He would not advise me, but let me tell you who would. And then he began to list some people sort of across the aisle. I mean, I think he was probably clearly trying to demonstrate that he can be bipartisan and that he has advisors who would, speak up from all different perspectives, and that he's open to, all kinds of different voices in his administration. Obviously, a critique of the current administration is that it's pretty monotheistic in that way, and from all indications that we have, the current president doesn't really listen to many different perspectives on most issues. So I think Obama is trying to paint an image of himself, which apparently is accurate. I mean, I don't think this is just a campaign facade. An image of himself as somebody who's a thinker and someone who's a listener before he makes key decisions.
We're going to welcome phone calls. Our guest this hour is Professor David Michael Green, Associate Professor of Political Science at Hofstra University, where last night's final presidential debate was held. And our phone number is 800-486-8655. Emails are talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The second hour of our program today, we'll be speaking with Nicholas Katzenbach. He is the author of Some of It Was Fun, Working with RFK and LBJ. You'll recall that he was Deputy Attorney General under Robert F. Kennedy and then Attorney General and Undersecretary of State for Lyndon Johnson. A lot of the book deals with the civil rights movement and how the government responded to the civil rights movement. It's It's a great read. Nicholas is now in his mid-80s, and this is his memoir. He'll be with us after 10 today. Last night's debate this hour, 800-486-8655 is our number, and Jim from Salt Lake City is our first caller. Hi, Jim.
Hi. Hey, I just want to say I think both candidates represented themselves well. I thought it was a very good debate, and thought the moderator did a very good job, too. You could almost not tell he was in the room at times. They were so involved. But the one thing that I was thinking of as the debate was wrapping up, I was thinking this possibly could be Senator McCain's last debate. And I was just wondering how he would react to that. And to my surprise, he didn't seem to have an exit strategy. He seemed so nervous once he was away from the chair. Didn't know to go left or right or, you know, shake whose hands first or greet his wife first or Michelle Obama. He just looked so uncomfortable. And after 40 debates just this year alone, it surprises me how nervous he looked.
You think he looked nervous, Professor Green?
I didn't pick up on that, actually. I was doing some radio, so I didn't get the chance to observe much after the debate ended. What you might have been observing, though, I think, is perhaps some uncomfortableness on the part of John McCain, because I think it's fairly clear at this point. Obviously, you know, we have almost 3 weeks till the election, and anything can happen. But barring some, you know, really astronomical event of great proportions, I think it's fairly clear that the election's going to go a different way for McCain, and that represents the end of a lifelong aspiration. We had a report even this last week that even when McCain was a POW, he was talking about being president, seriously talking about it. And so, you know, I think he probably realized coming out of that debate that however well he didn't do well enough to reverse this tide, which is now running pretty strongly against him. If you look at the best measure we have of the popular vote, which is, you know, nationwide polls, some of them are running up to 14% in favor of Obama. The split is even bigger if you translate that into state-by-state polls, which then translate into electoral votes, where it looks like Obama may have, you know, perhaps a 360 to 180 electoral vote advantage, which would be a real blowout. But in any case, unless McCain did something really you know, quite amazing last night, I think it was clear that he wasn't going to reverse the tide, and he was probably feeling at the end that he hadn't done that, and that this was perhaps the last chance that he had to change this election current, and then he hadn't done that, and so maybe he was feeling some emotions around that.
Thanks, Jim, so much for your call. Let's go to Ron from La Crosse. Hi, Ron.
Yes, I think Obama did well and probably better, but he could have done even better when John McCain told him, well, it sounds like you're running against President Bush. If that's the case, you should have ran against him 4 years ago. Obama should have shot back. John, you should have ran against President. You should have ran against President Bush 4 years ago. You probably wouldn't be in this mess now. It might have divided the Republican Party. I know the far right in the Republican ranks doesn't like McCain, but they need to ask themselves, look in the mirror and ask themselves, is our party better off now than it was 4 years ago? So McCain sat it out, just like all the rank and file good conformist Republicans, and let the imperial incumbent, you know, make his royal progress to the nomination in 04, and now look at the situation they're in.
Professor Green.
Yeah, it's funny. You know, that was, I think, if there was a line of the night or maybe a line of the season, that was probably it. And, you know, I think we all sort of thought about, many of us thought about, you know, what would have been the great rejoinder. And of course, it's much easier, you know, 6, 8, 24 hours in retrospect to look back and to think of it than it is to be sitting there on the spot. My own thought was that what Obama might have said was, you're right, Senator, I stand corrected. Since you've bragged about voting with the president 90% of the time, then you're not President Bush, you're just 90% of President Bush. That might have sounded a little snarky, but in any case, he did come back, you know, reasonably well by saying, it seems to me, that, you know, yes, you've shown some independence on some issues, but on the key issues that Americans care about, particularly economic issues, health care, and that sort of thing, that you're right down the line with President Bush. And so, you know, I don't think Obama got rolled in that exchange, but clearly McCain had practiced that line.
Yes, it was a good line.
Yeah, that mm-hmm. was the, you know, you're no John Kennedy line mm-hmm. of 2008. It's not the same as that line that Lloyd Bentsen uttered. You know, won't go down in history the way that one did. But you know, that's what McCain was shooting for. And I will say, Kathleen, I mean, I'm sort of surprised that really in four debates, that's maybe the only line that emerges from all four of them. I'm surprised that the folks advising both these candidates hadn't really stocked them up with more of those sort of zingers. We didn't really see a lot of them this season.
Mm-hmm. Thanks so much for the call. Let's go to Bradley from Minocqua. Hi, Bradley.
Hi, it's actually Radley.
Oh, Radley. Hi, Radley.
Hi. Thanks for the great show. I guess you guys have covered a lot of what I wanted to share. It's interesting on the comment about, you know, we all think about snarky comments we could make to rebut someone else's comment. And it was just really evident to me what a clean campaign Obama has run. I mean, he did it with Hillary Clinton, and he's been continuing to do it. He seems to always take the high road. And rather than go for a zinger back, you know, he really turns and addresses the issues. And last night was probably as feisty as we have seen Obama get. But still, he was willing to kind of take a deep breath and dismiss some of the issues or some of the stabs and jabs and get back to the issues more than McCain was. And I thought McCain was really, really feisty, you know, that he had to go for it last night, and he did. And I think that's one reason that voters are not very interested in McCain, because he does seem so mean-spirited in some ways. And we're, I think as a country, we're trying to get away from that. But the other thing I just wanted to make a comment on was the way you opened this conversation today, talking about the future and whether there's hope. And I look at our country with outstanding natural resources. We go from subarctic to subtropic in the United States, and we have a fairly highly educated workforce. And, you know, I just don't see that being a combination of a situation that's running for economic disaster in the long run. We just need to change a course to get us back. And what I hear Obama saying is we need to invest in the future rather than hoard all our resources and, you know, give to the wealthy and everybody for themselves. You know, we need to invest in the future of our country so we can build for a better tomorrow. And I'll just hang up and
okay.
Your comment.
Thanks. Thank you, Radley. Professor Green.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with the caller, Kathleen. I want to reiterate my sense that voters are, I think, very much more visceral and emotional in how they make their decisions than we'd like to believe they are cognitive. So we can hope in a democracy that voters will go down a laundry list of issues and say, oh, I agree with this one here, but not that one there. But in reality, I think most of them are, you know, taking kind of visceral reactions to these candidates. So you have to kind of suit the times. You know, there will be times when we want somebody who kind of burns hot, but Obama is obviously not that. He's a very cool customer. And apparently he suits the times in terms of what voters want right now. And he's been really unflappable. And I think he has, in my judgment, he's really hit the high road throughout this campaign. I mean, Cindy McCain, you know, said something the other day or the other week that I thought was just, you know, really off base. She said, Barack Obama has run the dirtiest campaign in American history. And I just think that's fairly outrageous for her to say, in the sense that I can really hardly think of one thing that would even qualify as dirty, let alone an entire campaign that's the dirtiest in American history. In my judgment, I think he's really run a pretty above-board campaign that's pretty admirable, not only because he's winning and because he came out of almost nowhere to win, certainly the Democratic nomination. That was highly unexpected. But also admirable because of the quality and the tone and the respect that it's shown for voters. And just one last note on that. I mean, I have mixed feelings about Senator Obama and Senator Obama becoming president, but there have been occasions during this campaign where I will admit that he's really moved me, particularly his Philadelphia speech on race. And the reason that it moved me, I mean, the content was excellent, I thought, but the thing that especially moved me that was because Obama in that speech and a couple other episodes throughout this campaign did something that's so rare in American politics in our lifetime, I think, and that is that he spoke to us as adults and he spoke to us as if we were sophisticated minds and that we could, you know, think more than two-dimensionally, and we could hold more than one thought in our minds at a time. And he really, I think, raised the bar of our public discourse, and I really admired that, especially throughout this campaign.
It is quite something, and we don't know if he'll be elected or not, but if you look at just where he is now, he did, as you say, come out of nowhere. He took on the Clintons, for heaven's sake, and look where he is. I think about that all the time when I see him. How did he do this? Organization, his mind, his hope that he gives to people. It is just remarkable, Professor Green.
That wasn't supposed to happen, was it?
No, it wasn't.
Well, I think there are two things that happened in particular. One is that he ran a really good campaign, and the other is that she ran a pretty bad campaign. And he got some early momentum. I mean, he didn't, you know, at the end of the day, of course, he didn't smash her to pieces, but he got enough early momentum and he got enough delegate votes that it was just impossible for her. And I think the way he did that was he used his community organizing skills, and he ran sort of under the radar, and he went to the small states, particularly those that held caucuses rather than primaries, and he out-hustled and he out-thought and he out-organized her. And I think that she came in thinking that she was the heir apparent and didn't have to do any of that stuff. And she kind of, I think, made some very bad choices in terms of her hires. And I think there was a lot of dissent and, infighting in her campaign. And I think that she just assumed that she was going to win. And then, you know, once he captured Iowa by that sort of stunning margin, that changed the dynamic of the race in a very big way. And even at that point, I think in some ways it was going to be very hard for her to recover. And I think that's really the story of the race, that he just kind of, you know, added bit by bit to his margin. And sometimes she would, you know, she would add some and he would, but she just couldn't ever quite recover. And the other thing that really benefited Obama that wouldn't, you know, if he had been running in the Republican race, this wouldn't have worked for him. But most of those primary contests, and perhaps all of them actually, are proportional in their allocation of delegates, whereas the Republicans do it more or less winner take all. So even when Hillary would win by some margin, that would not translate into a big gain for her in terms of delegate counts. And so he just kind of outlasted her and out-hustled her and out-thought her, I think, and kind of came in under the radar, and he beat the Clinton machine.
It's quite a story. Don from Wisconsin Rapids. Hi, Don.
Hi there. I have a couple questions from last night's debate. When they were talking about the judges that Obama voted against, McCain said Breyer and Roberts. Did he mean Alito and Roberts?
Yeah, I think that was a mistake.
Oh, I thought it was, too.
Okay, and the other one that I had was, does Sarah Palin's baby have autism, as McCain said, or does the baby have Down syndrome, or is that the same thing, and I just don't understand it?
I'm certainly not a medical expert, but I don't think they're the same thing, and as I understand it, the baby has Down syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way I understood it also. Okay, thank you.
Thanks for the call. Let's go to Sharon from Milwaukee. Hi, Sharon.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you for letting me speak.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to just say that I think McCain clearly won the debate last night. He was very effective. He had great leadership, very knowledgeable. I'm not sure what polls you are taking your information from. Fox News had McCain ahead 78% by their voting poll, and only 12% of Democrats thought that Obama won the debate. So I think, you know, relationships do matter, and I think his association with Reverend Wright is impressing the voters as they become more aware of Reverend Wright's extremist, how he says things like down with America. And I think a lot of voters weren't aware of this in spring. Voters don't follow this. I have people calling me all the time who just found out about his affiliation with Acorn, and it does bother them. But let's take that all off the plate. McCain hit a home run with the independents last night when he said, look, all Obama's going to do is increase taxes. It's when Obama was going to say he was going to create another program and increase taxes. And McCain looked at him and said, look, this is what you're going to do. You're going to expand government. You're going to increase taxes just when we're about to have an economic collapse. This is not a good plan. His plan about giving a tax cut for businesses who make less than $250,000, and he says that's 95% of small business, who is he talking about? I mean, that sounds like a college student who goes to the airport and shines shoes to make a couple bucks. What business, small business in America makes $250,000? I think McCain was great. He showed that he is a federalist. He's going to decrease our taxes. He's going to decrease government. The state of California is now asking for a $7 billion bailout because they didn't cut spending. They've expanded. And guess who's paying for that? That's my 401k.
All right. But Sharon, the thing is, I understand what you're saying, and the commentators last night seemed to agree that it was a win by McCain. But the polls that were done among independents and undecided on CBS, on CNN, on Fox News as well, all of those channels showed that it was a clear victory for Obama, and I think the commentators were surprised by that.
I don't agree with that. I'm not sure CBS and CNN, they're very Democratic. Who is your speaker, Republican or Democratic?
We're talking about the reports that came in the papers today. Fox News as well. These were all of the organizations that have pulled the independents and the undecided. They all determined that it was an Obama victory and a big victory last night.
Well, that isn't some of the information that I have. But I just, my other points I think should be well taken.
Right. Well, let's get a response from Professor Green. Professor Green.
Yeah, excuse me. From what I saw, all the polls showed that, actually all three debates, by very similar margins, mm-hmm. that Obama wins by roughly slightly less than a double what McCain comes in. So you have like sort of 60-30 or slightly less than that for Obama in all three debates. And I don't know what Fox did. I think they do some sort of in-house thing with Fox viewers or something, which would obviously be very biased toward the right and very unscientific. But the best scientific polls that we have are, and as Kathleen mentioned, all of them are saying the same thing, and they've said the same thing in all three debates. And actually, that makes me slightly suspicious about the nature of polling these debates, in the sense that I wonder if they reflect not so much debate performance as the dispositions of viewers generally coming in. But regardless of what's going on, what people are saying in the best, most scientific polls is that Obama is winning by, very healthy margin. As to the other issue, particularly the tax issue, I mean, Obama made this point, and I think it's a point that really bears some thought and analysis, even from the caller's perspective. She's obviously a McCain partisan. But when George Bush and the Republicans came into office 8 years ago, we had a $5 trillion debt, national debt. It's now $10 trillion, so it's been effectively doubled in those 8 years. And if you think about what that translates to, there's 150 million payroll workers who pay taxes in the United States. If you allocate that to each person and forget about the increase in that debt every year and forget about the interest that we have to add to that every year, you're still talking about $67,000 per worker, per taxpayer. And just to take the example of somebody who might make, say, $15 per hour, that represents about 2.25 years that any taxpayer would have to work starting right now in order to pay down their share of the national debt, which is doubled under George Bush. So if you're an angry taxpayer and you're angry about government waste, you might want to think about where to direct that anger, because it's really been a dramatic increase in the last 8 years.
Are you convinced, Sharon, that McCain will win?
I think it's going to be closer than we realize, and I do wish that we could talk a little bit about voter fraud, too, and how this is really impacting the swing states.
Okay, that's a good issue for us. What about these charges about Acorn, and there have been other charges about Ohio that were on the news last night, that the checking with another database may disenfranchise some people when they go to the polls? Can you address that, Professor Green?
I don't know a lot about that. I take Obama at his word, although, maybe I shouldn't. I don't think that he was involved in that at all. Acorn is an independent organization. And by the way, maybe some of your listeners have seen, as I have on YouTube or in other places, there's a clip of Senator McCain addressing Acorn. I think it's only 2 years
I saw
ago,
that.
Lauding them for their work, which is a bit odd now that he is, suggesting that they're trying to perpetrate the greatest, most massive voter fraud in American history and sort of disembowel American democracy. But I don't think there's a significant attachment that I'm aware of between the Obama campaign and Acorn. And I doubt seriously that Acorn is really trying to undermine American democracy and is trying to scam the election, although, you know, it's possible. But I think Obama's sense of that was probably pretty accurate. Acorn hires people, as do, you know, campaigns all the time or organizations all the time, to go out and register voters. Well, you can only be so responsible for what those people actually do. You have an obligation to monitor and to try to do quality control. But at the end of the day, if a given individual wants to try to make more money by opening the phone book and doing bogus registrations, I don't think Acorn, let alone Obama, can be responsible for that.
More phone calls in a moment. Sharon, thanks very much for your call. That leaves one line open if you'd like to get through, 800-486-8655. Our guest is Professor David Michael Green, Associate Professor of Political Science at Hofstra University, where last night's final presidential debate took place, and we're talking about what we saw, what we heard, and welcoming your calls or your emails if you can't get through. That's talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up the second hour of our program today, Nicholas Katzenbach will be joining us. He's written his memoir, Some of It Was Fun, working with RFK and LBJ. He was Deputy Attorney General under President Kennedy and then Attorney General and Undersecretary of State for Lyndon Johnson. He recalls his experiences. I think some of the most interesting, at least to me, were trying to enroll African-American students at Ole Miss and then the University of Alabama. He recalls many interesting and sometimes confrontational exchanges with RFK, J. Edgar Hoover, George Wallace, and LBJ. It should be a really interesting conversation, hour number two. All right, phone calls, 800-486-8655. I haven't asked you what it was like at Hofstra last night. It must have been fairly exciting, huh, Professor Green?
Oh, it was a carnival. I couldn't get anywhere near the debate. Actually, none of the faculty got in.
Oh.
It was funny because I would have, you know, former students from, you know, 5-10 years ago saying, hey, can you get tickets for my family? And I'm like, you know, I teach political science here and I don't have a ticket.
Oh.
But outside there was all kinds of media and, you know, all kinds of sort of tents and venues, and people were just really excited. The students were just buzzing, and it was a huge event for Hofstra, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Julian from Madison. Hi, Julian.
Yes, good morning. This is, hi, David. This is Jill, friend from Madison.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
Jill, how are you?
I'm good. I'm delighted to hear your voice and your viewpoints. I wanted to my comments. I think are more about what was missing last night. Just right off the top, we have the viewpoints of only two people when the Cynthia McKinney and Ralph Nader were denied their input. And I just want to say that Democracy Now! This morning with Amy Goodman had them answer the same questions, and it was pretty interesting. So democracynow.org if anyone wants to hear their viewpoints. But what was particularly for me obviously missing was barely a mention, and very, very barely, the Iraq-Afghanistan situation. And just for people's information, last night, a few minutes before the debate started, Veterans Against the War, attempting to get into the debate peacefully, one or even two were trampled by the horses that were trying to stop them get in. And I hope we hear that the one that was trampled, Iraq vet, was not seriously injured. But that was barely mentioned. The nuclear, when they're talking about nuclear, both candidates are for it. And I want to say it's not clean, it's not safe, and the cost is exorbitant. And last but not least, when they talked about NAFTA, they kept talking about free trade, and there was no mention of what really is involved, which is fair trade. So, David, I'm looking to hear what you have to say about any of that.
Oh, thanks, Jill. It's great to hear from you again. Let me start. I mean, you put a lot of stuff on the table. Let me just address a couple of things. Obviously, we have an electoral system which privileges two parties, and some people think that's good. Some people think that that brings stability to America that other countries don't have. And a lot of other people believe that it closes down the debate, and so that, you know, we've often had two parties that were described as Tweedledee, Tweedledum. And, you know, a lot of elections in my lifetime, I think, could accurately be characterized that way. I don't think this is one of them, actually. While I wish that there were other voices out there, I do think that there is a real choice, at least this time, between the two parties. It could be a better choice. There could be more choices, I think. But I think there is a fairly clear choice that, you know, perhaps we haven't seen in other elections in the past. As to the wars, I think you really raise a good point there. And I don't think that reflects well on Americans, frankly, because I think the dynamic that we're really seeing right now is that people are nervous about economic issues, and they're thinking very much about their personal pocketbook questions, and everything else is really off the table at that point. And I think it reflects a certain willingness amongst Americans to kind of set everything aside, which is partly understandable because people are scared, and I think they do have reason to be scared. But at the same time, there are, I think, moral questions and moral obligations, not least of which reflected in these wars, especially the Iraq War, that Americans seem somewhat willing to walk away from. Or if you think about the drill, baby, drill chant, you know, that's reflective of that as well, or perhaps nuclear power as well. You know, it's sort of like, how can we continue to have the lifestyle that we've had at all costs? And I regret that that is the attitude, but I think that's what you're seeing in that scenario.
And thanks very much for your call. We go next to Greg from Minocqua. Hi, Greg.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for the opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't disagree with more with your Milwaukee McCain partisan. What struck me last night was the stark difference in demeanor and temperament between the two candidates. I watched Obama, and I saw somebody cool and calm and collected, and who didn't seem to take the campaign, even though it has sunk to some pretty nasty levels, who didn't seem to take any of that personally. McCain, on the other hand, seemed to be angry and grouchy and condescending and arrogant at times. And most perplexing of all, he had hurt feelings about what Congressman Lewis apparently said, and laid the responsibility for that comment on Obama, which made no sense to me whatsoever. The questions I have are number one, the perception gap between the pundits and the public. When the debate ended and the pundits came out and announced a McCain victory, I just was incredulous. I had to wonder if they were watching the same debate that I was, and I was relieved to see that the polls were more reflective of my own attitude than the pundits. And the second question has to do with the mysterious phrase, spread the wealth around,
right,
that McCain used on more than one occasion, trying to tie it apparently into class warfare of some sort. But I didn't understand where the phrase came from. I don't understand what it means. And I certainly don't understand why McCain felt apparently that it was some sort of powerful statement to make about Obama. And I wonder if you could clarify that for me.
Yeah, interesting question. Professor Green.
Right. Apparently that came from the end of the conversation with the now global icon, Joe the Plumber. And evidently, I've never seen this conversation. I don't know if there's a recording of it, but evidently Obama sort of used this line, presumably kind of glibly, what we want to do is spread the wealth around, meaning, of course, what we've seen in the last 30 years in America is a dramatic concentration of wealth in the hands of the richest Americans, to the point where we now look much more like 1929 than we do like, say, 1960. And so I think that's probably what Obama meant by that. But McCain tried to turn that into a statement of socialist values, essentially, and he trotted out that that old Republican shibboleth of class warfare. And he went back to the first line over and over, spread the wealth. And I think he's really trying to scare taxpayers into believing that Obama, you know, favors some sort of socialist redistribution of wealth scheme, where he's going to take all your money into Washington and then redistribute it out to others. That's, I think, what he was trying to do there. As to your first question, I would just return to what I had said earlier. I mean, I think it depends almost entirely on what your standards and your benchmarks are when you score these debates. So the pundits, I think, were probably scoring on points, number one, and number two, probably comparing McCain in debate three to McCain in debate one and debate two, in which case, arguably, you could make the case that he had a good night. But the viewers, I think, use different standards, and I will say again that I think largely those are largely maybe even unknown to the viewers themselves what they are, and are largely visceral. And so, as the caller mentioned, they're, you know, viewers, I think, react strongly to all these sort of cues that suggest emotional states. So the anger that seems to emanate from John McCain, for example, was probably ratcheted up in the third debate compared to the others, and that's a turnoff. And so I think viewers, you could see using that standard why viewers might have come to a very different conclusion than the pundits did.
Mm-hmm. And I think that this has been said obviously many times, but this is striking, I think, that during these times when everybody's worried about their money and their retirement and their jobs, and these just aren't good times for us, you want somebody who's fairly cool about things, or at least is makes you feel comfortable somehow, so that usually this difference in temperament perhaps wouldn't be as important as it is this election. What do you think?
You know, it's hard for me to say, Kathleen, because, I mean, what's an analogous period, maybe two analogous periods? One would be 1980, that election. And I don't know that I'd describe Ronald Reagan in those terms. I mean, I think Ronald Reagan did project a certain comfort in his own skin, which mm-hmm. you do also get from Obama. But his rhetoric was, I don't think, was terribly cool. I mean, I think it was not hot, but it was pretty warm. In terms of talking about how the government is, you know, the problem, not the solution, and getting the government off people's backs and that sort of thing. And then, of course, 1932 would be another example. So it's I don't know that there's a rule there, you know, that at least one that I can identify, which would suggest in moments of crisis that people want somebody who's got a very cool disposition. I'm not sure that was the case in 1980, for example, when people were hurting economically at that point and voting their pocketbook at that point as well.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Greg, for your call. Let's go to Stephen from Madison. Hi, Stephen.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to observe that John McCain threw a lot of red meat last night to what, since the Gingrich Revolution, we've considered to be the base of the Republican Party, particularly on the class warfare issue and regarding a woman's right to choose. And at the same time, some of the most widely read conservative thinkers in the country, I'm thinking of George Will, David Brooks, and Bill Kristol, have all but given up on the McCain campaign and often thrown him under the bus for some of his recently inflammatory rhetoric. I'm left with the question, who is really the base of the Republican Party? And have the Republicans perhaps misjudged who their base is? Is it really these far-right social conservatives, or are they perhaps, misfiring?
Well, my sense is that the Republican Party is in for a period of deep woe, and possibly even, it's conceivable to me, you could see the demise or somehow the crack up of the Republican Party. And the reason I say that is, I guess, twofold. My suspicion is that 2008 is going to be an election like 1932. It's going to be a watershed election. It's going to go dramatically in favor of the Democrats, both in the House and the Senate, where you might even see a filibuster-proof 60-vote majority. And I think in the presidential race, my guess is you're going to see actually a blowout, particularly in the Electoral College. And Republicans, then, the second part of this is Republicans are going to be faced with having to pick themselves up somehow and reformulate themselves. But and some people have suggested that there might be a civil war within the Republican Party, which makes a lot of sense except for one thing, and that is there's only one wing of the Republican Party now. There really aren't moderates except for the occasional sort of Olympia Snow. But, you know, those people are by far and away the exception. And so, I mean, what you have, I think, is a party that is deeply wedded to a fairly far-right ideology that has become extremely unpopular and I think sort of has nowhere to go. And so it'll be very interesting to see how Republicans recover from this election, presuming that it goes the way that I think it's going, and what they can possibly do to try to market themselves. And, you know, one clue to that might be the Conservative Party in Britain, which went through something of the same process. And ultimately, they managed to move towards the center, but it was a very wrenching process for them. And there are a lot of folks in the Republican Party and the conservative movement who just are not going to want to see that happen.
Mm-hmm.
And you may see some really bloody stuff happen in the ensuing years.
Professor Green, thank you so much for being with us. It was a great hour.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Thank
you for having me.
Sure. Professor David Michael Green, Associate Professor of Political Science at Hofstra University. We do want to tell you that our political conversation continues. We're doing a special program on October 30th, Thursday, October 30th, 2 weeks from today, from 9 to 11. We'll be broadcasting from Marquette University Alumni Memorial Union. It's a special 2 hours. The first hour will have guests from the major political parties and maybe minor political parties as well. And the second hour will be devoted to Marquette students as they talk about the issues that are important to them in this particular election. 9 to 11 is the time for this. It's the time of our show, and the admission is free. But we ask that we know if you're coming or not so we can figure out the seating arrangements, you know, how many chairs we need. So call 414-227-2047 if you would like to attend, and we'd love to have you there. 414-227-2047. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this program, and thanks to John Treader for answering all the calls here this morning, many of them. We have another hour coming up. Stay tuned. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.